We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time. Welcome to another week of In the Know. Mason, I heard you just got back from vacation. What's it like being back in the real world?
Sucks. you know how it is, catching up with work after missing 3 days. You're on vacation, but you're not really on vacation because you just got to make up for all the crap you didn't do while you're on vacation. So long day today, but the vacation itself was obviously, it was awesome. Just 5 days in Cancun. Mostly sunny and nice. Had one day of shit weather, but that was like right in the middle of the vacation, so it was a nice kind of take a step back and just relax and do nothing day. And just really nice to get into the warm weather living up in Chicago, the frozen, good old frozen tundra. So reality sucks.
What would you say was the most fun thing you did on vacation?
This is funny because Anna asked me this last night, what my favorite part of the trip was, and I didn't have a good answer.
This is your second go at this question.
No, I know. Like every part of it was great, which is of course the very cliche generic answer, but one of the things that we did do, and if anyone's been to Cancun, it's probably one of the top touristy things to do. And I was skeptical because I was like, oh, this is just something that all the tourists, it's like, it's going to Bourbon Street, New Orleans. It's like not the cool thing to do, but it people do it anyway. But it was so Coco Bongo is the big show out there. It's like a kind of like a Vegas type show. It's just they do have a bunch of acts for a bunch of different very American songs through the years, and it turns into just a crazy like dance party. It's if the tickets it's in itself are open bar, and so it was a fun night, and better than I had anticipated. I thought it was just going to be like this again classic tourist attraction. It was, but it was still a blast.
So speaking of better than anticipated, is that how you would categorize the Pelicans against the Warriors?
Yes, I think that's an accurate description, especially given the way they absolutely throttled the Nuggets the night before. That not like they had to play anyone in the fourth quarter, which is the Golden State Warriors we've come to know over the past few years. But it was a really fun game. I kind of broke it down, and I'd be curious to see if you agree, is if Steph doesn't go full incendiary mode in the third quarter, this game may turn out differently. And despite the team forgetting how to rebound in a lot of the second half, that stretch from Steph. I mean, Steph's been crazy the last three games. One of the stats they showed on ESPN. Apologies to Joel Myers. I just watched it because it's about a minute or two ahead of my Fox Sports Go app stream, and so when I can watch it live, I like to do that. But one of the stats they show was Steph just his last three games from 3-point range, he's shooting like over 50% in like 10 attempts per game, and so I mean, what are you going to do? If that doesn't happen, if he doesn't make 7 threes in the third quarter, this thing probably turns out differently.
Yeah, Steph is a nightmare. I mean, as much as James Harden has been doing, the much as he's been putting his team on the back, like, Steph is still the single guy that scares me the most when he walks on the floor. Like, with James, you know, he's going to take over the game. He's going to get people involved, but he's liable to do dumb stuff. He's liable to mess up on defense. He's liable to turn the ball over. And he's liable to have nights where he shoots 1-for-17 from three. They're not often, but when Steph walks on the floor, it just seems like everyone on this team, every time we play them, just their brain turns off on defense and they have no idea what to do. And everyone's scrambling to cover Steph or Clay and Durant. And then you have guys like Draymond and Looney and Iguodala that are going off because of that. So it's not fun for me.
Yeah, I mean, but a lot of fun apart from the total mess that was transition defense. I mean, I feel like there was a lot of positive takeaways. I mean, this team is playing well. I mean, they play that game against any other team in the league, they probably win, right? I mean, is there any other team in the league that you think that type of effort would result in anything but a win?
No, absolutely. I don't think there's a single team out there that's capable of going 147 points while the Pelicans score 140. That's just the Warriors being the Warriors. I mean, yes, Steph was a nightmare. Klay was good. KD was good. And they just tore us apart. Our defense was not where it needs to be. It hasn't been good, but last night particularly, you mentioned transition, was awful. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that is just guys are freaking out about what to do about Steph or Clay or Durant. And it just helps the Golden State role players so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's unfortunate. I think the Pelicans played really well offensively. I don't think they're going to face a team with that much firepower anytime soon, so defense should look better, particularly against Portland, who they've had experience with in the playoffs. Portland isn't reinventing the wheel this year. They're same old team. They're doing really well. They're solid. If the Pelicans can execute a lot of the same stuff they executed in the playoffs, they should be in a good spot to continue.
Yeah. And I mean, the one thing I kind of got tired of hearing, and I even called it out in the first half, the fact that Draymond, of course, it feels like Draymond only shoots well against the Pelicans and nobody else. But and people pointed to, well, if Draymond doesn't go whatever he went from 3-point range, 4-of-7, the Pelicans probably win. It's like, yeah, but Julius Randle went 3-for-3 from downtown too, and that's just ridiculous. That really shouldn't happen. Everyone else who shot well for the Pelicans, I feel like, is fine. I mean, it's is pretty reasonable. Drew, Nico, Darius, I mean, all those guys shot well. And that pretty much carried the Pelicans to their 50% plus 3-point percentage last night. But, I mean, yeah, Randle's not going to go 3-for-3 from 3-point range very often. So that pretty, I'd say that counteracted
the. But on the flip side, McNamara had a great tweet. I don't know if you saw this. Draymond, when shooting against the Pelicans, is 6-for-12 from three. So he's shooting 50% in the two matchups that we've had so far, right? Mm-hmm. Against the rest of the NBA, he's 8-for-55. That's insane. That's absurd.
Come on.
What?
Oh, man. I mean, yeah, that's crazy. That's beyond crazy, but I don't know what it is. And
No, I mean, yeah, maybe we are, you know, it's like he's played us so many times, we are a scrimmage to him, and he just, whatever. I don't know. Whatever the case may be, he lights us up, and he's a phenomenal player and outside of scoring anyway. So when he's giving you scoring, it's just unfair. Anywho,
it's a very common word for this Warriors.
Don't want to spend too much time on the Warriors. The Pelicans have been pretty decent. They won 6 of 9 going into this game. I was kind of tweeting about how they need a win at a 2 out of 3 clip, a 66% clip, to kind of hit the 46 win benchmark that I think it'll take to get into the playoffs. They've done that the last 3 sets of 3, you know, 6 of 9.
That's interesting. Hold on. I want to pause a second there. You think it's going to take 46 to get in this year?
46 to get in and avoid the Warriors, probably. Yeah.
Ah, okay. I think that makes sense. I was kind of surprised because I think it took 46. Denver won 46 last year and didn't get in. But I would think that the competitiveness of the West, even if a couple teams drop off like Memphis or Dallas, which, you know, they probably will, whether it's them or some other teams, I still think it's the competitiveness of the West is going to drive down the wins that it takes to get in. But I think that's fair to say maybe the seventh seed needs 46.
Yeah. And I mean, that's just like, it's call it arbitrary, but that's kind of the benchmark that I'm looking at. Because, you know, then even if it takes a little bit less, you're leaving yourself a little bit more room for error. So the 46 is definitely the target that I want them to go for. So, you know, they've won 6 of 9. They just started their new set of three, so they dropped this first one. They have an opportunity to still be on pace, you know, if they win in Portland and they win in Memphis. So these games are pretty critical as far as keeping pace. And then, you know, ideally you want to see them go on a stretch where they win 4, or they win 5, or they win like 7 of 9. But as of now, I'll take 2 out of 3. And even if that means like you win one, you lose one, you win one, and then, you know, you continue a pattern of that sort, so where it doesn't look like you're stringing together a bunch of wins, but in reality, you're outpacing what you were currently doing earlier in the season. So it's doable. It's going to take a lot. Every game is super important. They definitely cannot afford extended losing streaks at all anymore. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they can still get it done.
Yeah, I think so. And they've had some bad luck this year catching opponents, either, you know, opponents that have been hurt for parts of the season, the Pelicans catching them fully healthy, or Golden State, obviously, when they start to finally put it together again by their standards. But they'll run into – so one of the games that I was most worried about over the next stretch is in Houston. And now, I mean, James Harden, clearly you already mentioned it's playing out of his mind, but now they're down Capella. And Chris Paul might be back by then, or if he's already – he's not back yet, no. But I think he might be back by then. But I mean, not having Capella is I think a pretty big loss for them, especially with the bigs that New Orleans has to deploy against them. So maybe they catch a break and can beat a Houston team that's been playing better even with the injuries.
Yeah, and I guess we can use that to kind of talk about what James Harden has done for those of you who live under a rock. James Harden is basically going on a 07-08 Kobe tear, one of those like MJ streaks where, you know, he's averaged, I think he's what, averaging now over 40 points a game over the last 15 or something. I mean, he had 55 two nights ago, and then 50, he followed that up with 58. He's averaging over 35 points a game on the season. He's been absolutely insane. I think he's like much must watch television at this point, even though there's a lot of criticisms about his game. I really do wonder how long can someone keep that up?
Yeah.
How long until you start getting burnt out? Can he do it this whole season? Which, if he does, what happens when he gets to the playoffs? I mean, that's going to be interesting to watch. I'm not going to pretend I know the outcome of that, and I'm not trying to like sinisterly suggest that he's going to flame out. Just curious, and you know, I'm hoping one of those burnout games comes against the Pelicans, especially because, you know, if they're down Capella, they're just going to be low on bigs, and I hope Gentry doesn't try to match them by going small. Just like continue to assault them with AD, with Randall, with Nico, with Ja. You have the clear advantage there. use it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Cecily, you saw the craziest stat that's been kind of floating around Twitter over the last 24 hours about how all of his points over the last two games have been unassisted.
Yeah, that's insane. What?
It's I mean, you want to talk about no help. When we talk about that with the Pelicans, that obviously relates to their defense, not the offense, not having Drew and AD not having help. But, man, Houston offensively, if you're going to have your star go and score 50-plus points tonight and not even set him up for a shot once, not that he might be not that he's passing the ball too much at this point, but I say that, but I'm sure he's got a bunch of assists, but I don't know if the fact that his teammates aren't really doing much to set him up for success is pretty wild.
It's honestly like tune in, see what he's doing, and just kind of try to wrap your head around that. That's all I got to say. It's pretty crazy. I want to take this opportunity to jump to the next segment of this podcast. And before we do, I want to shout out we want to shout out some sponsors. So give us a couple minutes to get some awesome reads coming your way. And then we're going to pick back up with some of the questions that you guys have put in our court. And we'll be going through them and offering our thoughts. So bear with us.
First of all, you've heard plenty of stories about drug cartels. They're all over the news. But the crime ring you probably never heard of is one of the most dangerous in the world. They're the Mennonite mob. Yeah, you heard that right. Mennonites. 99% of them are kind, God-fearing people. But there's one group that has smuggled millions of dollars of narcotics from Mexico to Canada. Wednesdays, starting January 23rd at 10, 9 Central, WGN America presents the new series Pure, based on the true events of the Mennonite mob. The show is about Noah Funk, the newly elected Mennonite pastor who is determined to rid his community of the drug cartel. But he finds himself way in over his head, and the good pastor, along with his wife, will do some very bad things, all in the name of protecting their family. Think of Pure as Breaking Bad meets Witness meets Narcos. Get hooked on Pure. Wednesday, starting January 23rd at 10, 9 Central, only on WGN America. WGN America is available on DirecTV Channel 307, Dish Channel 239, or check your local cable listings for the channel in your area. So this is from our other sponsor. And if you're unlike me, you probably did make a New Year's resolution. If you're planning to eat better, exercise more, be more patient, kinder, or whatever, it all starts with a good night's rest. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the 4-pack special and enter my promo code COZY, and you'll get 2 premium MyPillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. It's amazing what difference a great pillow makes. If you go to MyPillow.com right now and click on their 4-pack, shipping is absolutely free. That's right, no shipping cost. Zippo, zilch, nada. And don't forget about their 60-day money-back guarantee. There is nothing better than the gift of restorative sleep. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the 4-pack special, and use my code COZY to get 2 premium MyPillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. MyPillow.com or call 800-966-1472. And remember, my promo code can be used for any offer on MyPillow.com. Again, that's promo code COZY.
COZY. Shout out MyPillow, shout out Pure. Pillows are super important, man. I feel like, I don't know, I'm very picky about my pillows. That's just me. Anywho, let's get into some of the questions that you guys have sent our way. Since we were kind of talking about the Warriors and Harden and that kind of stuff, you got a question. I'm going to let you read it, kick it off, and then we can kind of talk about it.
So our buddy Sam from the Light Years podcast, also on the Blue Wire Network, him and Andy do a great job, and they're just characters in general. Asked us how much better than AD is Steph, and the beauty of this question, knowing Sam, is that I have no idea if he's trolling or not. He's a guy who he legitimately, I mean, if you go follow him on Twitter, he likes watching the Pelicans. He's a Pelicans guy. That as much as you can be as like kind of a secondary team, he's you know, you hear a lot of people come at the Pels when every chance they get, and he's kind of been in their court some of the with their recent couple of years. But I don't know how to approach this question. Do you have a thought here, or do you want me to kind of just give it my best shot?
No, you give it your best shot first, and then we can talk about it. We can have some fun with this.
I mean, so here's the thing. I mean, it really depends on how much you want to weight the whole two-way aspect of this conversation. So I think Steph changes the game more than Anthony Davis does. And I think most of the listeners in this podcast are probably going to agree with that. AD's defense is certainly light years ahead of Steph's. But that being said, Steph is no slouch on defense. And I think that's a common misconception of his game, that he's just, he sucks on defense because of his size or what have you. And I don't think
skin complexion.
Huh?
No, I'm serious. Yeah. Like, there's people that look at him and they're like, oh, well, Steph is just, I don't know. I don't want to really get into that. But yeah, people come up with all sorts of weird reasons to hate on him.
Yeah, it's a good point because, I mean, the reasons that people use to defend it are pretty ridiculous, and I think that's the point there. And so, I mean, that said, we just talked about how much he changes the game. Just the term gravity, I think – I didn't even think the term gravity existed in the NBA context before Steph Curry came around.
Maybe Shaq.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's him, and it just does – he does so much to change a team's game plan on defense. And, like, with AD, you can send – double teams, and while that won't always work, it's if you're not concerned about the rest of the roster, it can get things done. Even with Steph, you can send double teams, and like, but if he gets an inch of space, that's all he needs, and good night. I mean, you saw it last night. I mean, you set one pick, he gets free for half a second, and game over. I mean, that's just such a different element of the game that he brings that no other player in the NBA and arguably in NBA history really brings to the table. And so I don't know how to quantify how much better how much better Steph is than AD. I don't think it's leaps and bounds, but I mean, I don't think Sam is wrong.
Yeah. I mean, so here's my take. It's a hot take. Sam's going to love it. I think Steph at his peak is the best player in the NBA. I mean, that I think from the level of impact that he has, there isn't a single guy, and like, no disrespect to LeBron, no disrespect to KD, I think Steph is the single most lethal offensive weapon that we have seen in NBA history. Just for the reasons that you mentioned, you give him an inch of space and he will punish you. And it's for this modern era, it's for this history, and then you look at all his impact metrics. Look at the absurd things. I mean, like, yes, the Warriors won 73 because they were a really good team, but Steph was insane that year. You know, and he was averaging 30. He made over 400 threes. And, like, the previous record was, like, 280-something. Like, the sheer magnitude of that is it's mind-boggling. And so I don't think it's a knock on AD to say, like, Steph impacts the game more. He just does. That being said, I do think there is a component in the playoffs where, you know, size kind of changes the game. And AD brings a lot of size to the table. I mean, that's his calling card. And he just plugs so many holes on defense and he just gets so much done on offense that it's frankly impressive that he can even, you know, approach the kind of impact a guy like Steph is having. Given his position and given his role and given, like, you know, how offenses are geared to set AD up, whereas, you know, you can kind of give Steph the ball and ask him to be magical. So, I mean, it's not a knock on AD. I think AD is a top 5-3 player in the league. All his numbers are right there. And AD is having a tremendous impact, but Steph is just that good.
I want to get off this question to other readers or other tweeters in this case. But when you said at his best, he's the best offensive weapon in the NBA. Is that so? I mean, you want to get a bucket, and you're starting. You're picking a five man unit. Your first pick is going to be Steph over LeBron.
For getting a bucket?
Yeah, just for your team to get an offensive bucket. So, because I'm trying to tailor this question to offense, because you mentioned just strictly offensively, and I'm trying to push on whether or not you think that, like, average LeBron versus average Curry, you know, who are you taking?
I mean, I feel like that's just a really difficult question because of the nature of what LeBron is and how good he is, but I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm taking Curry. I think there is so many different things. Like, I mean, first of all, obviously Curry's an amazing ball handler. He can create his shot. One of the most underrated aspects of him is he's an elite finisher. He's elite at every level, the rim, mid-range, and the three. And he's not just a three-point shooter. And two, like, I think he's just more versatile off the ball. I mean, don't get me wrong, like, LeBron's a good cutter and all that, but LeBron cannot sprint around like 300 screens like Curry does, pass the ball, relocate, get the ball, and just fire a three and completely demoralize you. I can probably draw up more plays for Curry, whereas LeBron, he doesn't need plays draws up for him, and that's an asset in and of itself. He can just go get you that bucket. But you know, when it comes down to scheme, like, I can give the ball to Curry or I could put him through a bunch of actions and he gets it done.
Yeah, I only asked because you said when Curry's at his best, I'd take him over anyone in the NBA. And I was trying to figure out, well, if Curry's not at his best, but at the game he typically plays, which is still really damn good, and the same goes for LeBron, who you taking? So, interesting. I go with LeBron, but I think your take is warm. I don't necessarily think it's scalding hot. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, fair enough.
All right. Okay. So let's find another one.
Yes, all right. So we got some questions. First one is from J-Dub, or IMJ9911. He says, when do I start to ignore their +2 net rating and the expected win-loss, and come to grips with that this probably isn't a good enough team to make the Western Conference playoffs? Well, J-Dub, I think at some point, you're absolutely right. Your record is your record. We've seen teams in the past. I think most recently it's been Charlotte. A lot of the Minnesota teams who have had a positive net rating or a net rating of one that's of a winning team and just come short of the playoffs and have actually had losing records. Part of that is, you know, failing to close out close games. But when, like, the games that they do win is, you know, they're winning by a significant margin, so their net rating is a little bit boosted. But I think with the Pelicans, I don't think we can ignore it yet. And that's, I only say that because of how injured they've been and they're finally getting their squad back together. I think, you know, if they win these next two games, they're 500 and they have a little over 30 games to go where they can easily make a run. And let's say, you know, from those 30 games, you go, I don't know, like 18 and 12. That's a winning record. It's probably enough to get you into the playoffs. So I wouldn't ignore it yet. I think those things are very real. There's still enough of the season left to let the sample catch up to them. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I agree. And it's, so I guess it's an issue, and I've harped on this a lot. It's an issue of sample size here. And, like, if the Pelicans for years under AD has been trash in clutch time, and this has been a recurring theme, they can't score when it matters and they can't get stops, I would be concerned. But I mean, this team with virtually the same roster, flip, you know, Peyton for Rondo, they were great in crunch time last year. And granted, there's the level of competition, I think on average, was probably a little bit lower, but still, I mean, going from what they did last year to what they did this year is not, it's not one thing. I mean, I think it's just the fact that, you know, it's a lot of things, but I'm just not ready to make that this team's calling card and say that, you know, that's that they're done because they can't win close games. I think that will that ship will right itself, especially if this team can finally stay healthy. And what we've seen, and even removing garbage time, this team has a top 10-ish net rating. And so it's a good basketball team. I mean, I'm not sure what else to say. They're not elite. They have been pretty damn good when they have their full complement of players. But, you know, we'll see where things go from here.
Yep. I agree. Okay. Moving on. Next question. Do you guys think with the recent health and the way the Pelicans have been playing lately, moderately better, that they have shifted the focus from trading for a star to minor pieces to help with their depth? What do you think, Mason?
So, no. I mean, I just think they – I mean, you saw this. What happened to this team when they lost a role player or two. I mean, the – I don't think shuffling deck chairs like that is going to make a tangible difference. I think if that's all they can get, that's all they can get, and that's fine. I mean, that no, if you can't get it, go get a star, because newsflash, stars are pretty hard to find because their teams like to keep those guys. Then you take a step down and see what else is available. And so I still think their focus is going to be on landing the best player possible, even if it takes a pick or two to do it. But if that deal doesn't materialize, I don't think they're going to do something incredibly stupid and just make a trade for the sake of making a trade. But I think the star is the focus, and if they can't find one, they'll reassess and go for something different.
By the way, this question was by Superstar Snake, and absolutely not. I don't think that the shift is going to focus from a star, because it's not about this season. It's not about the next 30 games, which... okay, you know, they're important. They want to make the playoffs. That's good. But it's about trying to keep AD long term. And I think you're thinking a little bit too short term if your goal is like, let's just get some pieces in depth and figure things out later. We don't have a later. The AD situation's on the horizon. You go get a star, that situation looks a little bit better. So that's my take on it. I think we kind of agree. Yep. Next question from Jeffrey Wendling, which shout out to him, I went to high school with him, great dude. Which team would be most likely replaced in the playoffs?
I was wondering if you were going to pick that one. This is interesting.
It's a good question. It's a really good question.
It's a fun thought exercise, even because who knows what the eight teams are going to be at this point. So who would we replace? I mean, so are we assuming that the top eight right now are the top eight in the playoffs, which would mean the Lakers are not in, or can we shuffle more things around?
I mean, you can shuffle them around.
Yeah. Okay.
But sure, you can even extend it to, I mean, I can go first. We can extend it to which teams are we going to leapfrog? And then that includes, that's kind of all encompassing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Clippers are going to drop. That's my take. They've been good all season, but I think they're going to drop. I don't think the Jazz are going to drop unless there's an injury. I'm not sure how sustainable the Spurs are. I don't know how the Rockets are going to look with extended Capella absence. LeBron's injury is looking like it's a little bit more serious than initially let on, so it's very possible we leapfrog the Lakers sometime in the next few weeks. Clippers are my pick, and everyone else kind of stay the same. Wow, this is tougher than I thought. Uh-huh. Clippers and Spurs. That's what I'm gonna put my money on.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Clippers, and if I had to pick a team out of the top eight right now, just because they've been almost uncharacteristically healthy for the guys they have on that roster. And not that I'm wishing injuries or anything, but I mean, if I had to pick one to drop, I mean, I think that's the most likely. I would have said Spurs, but they've been kind of blowing the doors off of teams. I mean, they're what are they there? Yeah, 7-3 in the last 10. I mean, they've flipped a switch and they're playing together. Pop is doing Pop things with that roster somehow. And so, I mean, I think that would be the number two team to drop. So I hate that I'm just agreeing with you again. But, I mean, so Utah is second to the Pelicans in differential between their net rating and their actual win total. So their expected win-loss record is, I don't know, I think it's – I don't have it in front of me, but I remember seeing that the Pelicans and Jazz were kind of right next to each other, 1-2 in that regard. So they're a good team. I don't expect them to really fall out. Portland is looks fine. I don't think they're going to keep
it. Just takes one injury, you know. Like if Lillard goes down for 4 weeks, what happens? You know, it is going to come down to health for a lot of those teams.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Portland stays in. I don't think they stay top four, but I think they make the playoffs. And so yeah, I mean, and that goes, and that doesn't even start to talk about, like you said, the Lakers are, you know, depending on when LeBron gets back, they're right there too. I think they're, I would be pretty surprised if they don't make the playoffs. And it's tough. Minnesota, I think, will fall down, and they're 11th right now. I think they'll stay. The Covington injury hurts them, even though they beat us without him. And then Sacramento is finally in the playoff hunt this late in the season for the first time in years. And I don't think they own their pick this year. So
they don't.
They really have no reason to.
Boston wants to try to sell us that pick for AD.
Sounds great. Lock it in. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, as much as we think this Pelicans team can turn it around because they're finally healthy, and I think they can, it's and Jason's been beating this drum for the past week or two. I mean, there's a lot of teams there to jump. It's the same situation we saw last year, and you know, they got in last year, but it wasn't easy.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a question that sticks out to you, or do you want me to keep picking these?
Let's see. I think I had one. Let's see. I can't find. I thought I had one, but I can't find it. Is there one? Grab one, and I'll take the next one.
Okay, here's a simple one. It's from DJ Dow, the one and only creator of our amazing intro music. He says, "How many times did a team score 140 points in regulation and lose?" So, DJ Dow, I ran a basketball reference search query for you, my friend. There have been 23 instances in all of basketball history where a team has scored 140 points in regulation and lost. And what's funny is the vast majority of these teams are Denver. And it's not just one season. It's across a bunch of seasons. You have the 90s Nuggets. You have the 80s Nuggets. And you have – do you have the 60s? No, you don't have the 60s. It's sprinkled across the 80s and 90s, but it's a lot of Nuggets. Lots of them. So hold on. Let me get the official number for how many Nuggets teams there were in this. So out of 23, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 of the 23 are Nuggets teams. It's pretty crazy. And the highest loss... trivia question here, 158 points scored in regulation, losing, Denver loses to Golden State 158-162 in 1990.
Which is funny since that just happened a couple days ago in drastic fashion.
Yeah, basically. I'm going to pull up the box scores from this game. Interesting. Golden State Warriors, their lead scorers, Chris Mullin with 38 points, Tim Hardaway with 32 points, Mitch Redmond with 29 points. For the Denver Nuggets, oh wow, you had Orlando Woolridge with 37 points, and Walter Davis off the bench with 33 points, and then a bunch of people in double figures. High scoring game.
Yep.
Do you want to guess what the pace of that game was?
112.
Way off.
Way low.
You're way low.
Yeah. I guess that yeah. I remember like, oh yeah, that, yeah, it's got to be low. 135.
That's really close. It's 139.2. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 90s Nuggets were on cocaine.
And then some of their more recent players probably actually were.
Oh, my God.
All right, so I'll take the next one. It's a question that kind of is similar from two different people. So, and this is something that I know you've talked about a little bit on Twitter, at least. So, Big Steve at BJ Big Player and Tejeda at B Tejeda One both asked about Elfrid Payton and not being in the game during crunch time, and I think it's a topic that's been curious considering how much better they played offensively with him. And even, I mean, the defense obviously hasn't been great, but I think Payton in the game is better than Tim Frazier in the game for defensive reasons, and not to mention rebounding. But do you have any thoughts on why? I know we both kind of disagree with it, but do you have any thoughts on what the thought process may have been from Gentry and the staff?
I don't like it. Those are my thoughts. I don't. And I think I don't like it because I don't like how Etuan Moore and Darius Miller are playing. They don't give me enough of what I need. I mean, they're shooters. They're there to space the floor, which you ask, why isn't Elfrid on the floor? Well, because he can't shoot. And in late game situations, he's probably a liability at the free throw line. I don't know how the front office views him defensively or the coaching staff views him defensively, but he's definitely better than Tim Frazier defensively.
Yep.
He's, I would say without a doubt, he's better than Etuan Moore defensively and Darius Miller, but it could be a size thing. It could be an injury management thing, but I guess the most logical conclusion that I've come to, it's spacing. They want AD in space with AD and Drew pick and rolling as much as they can, and three shooters, which now that Nico's back is possible. And we saw it last year where Rondo wouldn't close games. It was Ian Clark.
Yep.
So, and it worked, and they were a fantastic clutch team last year for you clutch statistic people out there. But maybe they're just trying to recreate some of that from last year where they just put AD and Drew in space and hope their sheer talent wins out. I don't like it, though.
Yeah, it's same. And maybe we'll start to see it more, especially now that Nico's back. I know it's probably, especially with front court of Randall and Davis, it's probably a tougher sell, especially one.
Oh, yeah, I don't want Elfrid and Randall on the floor together at crunch time at all.
Yeah, I mean, like Randall's going to handle the ball a little bit himself, as we know, and that it's going to cramp your spacing too much, and it makes your team worse defensively. And so, I think there's an easy case for Payton to play with Davis and Nico, and then Drew and whoever else, whatever the hot hand is that game. I think makes sense.
Just go with Etuan, like. That lineup worked great this year, worked great last year. They haven't really gone back to it. And part of it is, you know, Nico and Elfrid are just getting back and they're just kind of fixing their rotations a bit. But
yep.
Use it.
Yep.
There's no reason not to. Just use it.
Yeah.
It's sitting there.
So one quick add-on. So Tejeda also asked me for a three-word description for Clark's minutes last night. I instantly just... I kind of lost it. I'm gonna go just but why though? It's probably
but probably why though? My, okay, afterwards.
But why though? Is my PG rated response to it? Because it just I don't know any scenario in which it made sense in that situation.
You want to hear my three words?
Yes.
What the F?
That's what I used last night. So I wanted to do something different.
No, I'm it just makes no sense. Your whole game, he doesn't play. He doesn't touch the ball. He hasn't been in the rotation. And then to close the third quarter, like, you know, one of the most crucial times because you want momentum going into the fourth, you throw in Ian Clark. And, like, I'm not going to blame Ian Clark for Steph going nuclear. That's unfair because Steph is Steph. But he played 2 minutes. He had a stupid turnover. We just dribbled the ball off his legs. He just he looked with a chicken who looked like a chicken with his head cut off, kind of just running around. It made no sense. Like, why? Like, what part of the game did you decide that Ian Clark is, like, did you just look down the bench? Like, hey, you with the jersey on, just go in. Like, I get it. You want to steal rest for Drew. You want to steal rest for Alfred, whatever. Frank's there. And it's not like, and you're like, okay, well, Ian's more seasoned. He's a veteran, yada, yada, yada. It's 2 freaking minutes. Like, what's Frank going to mess up so badly in 2 minutes that you know, Ian's going to be amazing at? It makes no sense.
And it's not even like it's for spacing either. I mean, the guy, he's had some hot streaks for sure, but he's a 34% career 3-point shooter. He's like 1% better than Solomon Hill for his career. Like, even that is questionable at best. I mean, I just...
No, he gives you nothing. Like, I talk all the time about Etuan Moore and Darius Miller giving you nothing. No, Ian Clark actually gives you nothing. And I don't understand because he looked fine. I think last year he was just... You know, it was a contract year for him. It is this year, but, like, he's not getting the minutes. It was a contract year for him last year, and he was just kind of chucking his way into a new contract potentially, and those things were working. He was, you know, he had a nice little, like, one dribble pull up going in for the mid range, and he looked like he could maybe give us some minutes, but it just, like, this year he's just been awful.
Same. And it has been a little frustrating with him, and now that the team's fully healthy, thought it wouldn't matter until last night for 3 minutes apparently, but he took a little jump last year toward down the stretch, but nothing doing this year. And so I don't see why he would be a rotation player at this point as long as his team can stay healthy. I would like you said, I would play Frank over him.
Just makes no sense.
Yeah. But,
all right. Let me pick the last question.
Okay.
It's a kind of change of pace question. It's from Cat Daddy or Rich Dat Dude, and he says he qualifies. It's an uncommon question. I think it's kind of fun. What are the chances we re-sign Diallo? And do you think his production so far is where it should be for a guy drafted in his situation, or has he underachieved? If you think he isn't where he should be, do you think that's on the Pels or that's on him?
Really interesting. The last part of the question is very interesting, because it's hard to, you know, it's hard to say he's underachieved. I mean, they drafted him as a raw, like, I don't know, 18 or 19 year old, and he wasn't even playing basketball until high school, correct?
Yeah, correct.
And so, I mean, just the athlete who they thought they could mold into an NBA player, and to be honest, I don't know enough to say if that's on the Pels or if that's on Diallo, but I don't really think his production is off from, you know, he's an early second round pick. It's probably a higher value lottery ticket than the second half of the second round. So it would have been really nice if he had turned into a consistent rotation piece. I think he still provides energy off the bench in certain situations. He's definitely not a rotation piece for this team at full strength. It's disappointing, but it's not, I mean, I'm not going to crucify the organization for Diallo not panning out. And I'm not saying the ship has sailed on him as an NBA player by any means, but I think his days are kind of numbered as a player on the Pelicans that's going to help in any real capacity.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of touch upon what you said, he barely played in high school. He sat out for most of the year in Kansas with eligibility issues. No one really knew what he would be like. He played in the All-Star, All-McDonald's MVP game or whatever, where he performed really well. I think he won and the MVP in that game when he was in high school. But beyond that, no one really knew what he could be. Second round picks rarely pan out into anything. So, you know, the Pels had a late pick and then a semi-early pick that they combined into an earlier pick to get Diallo, which was a fine play. They took their shot. They've been extremely patient with his development, trying to bring him along correctly, putting him in the G League, you know, utilizing him in summer league. He works constantly with the player development coaches. So I don't think it's on the Pels that he isn't where he needs to be right now. I just think those are the limitations of him as a player. But, you know, it does kind of sting. And I don't put this on the Pels because, again, second-round picks are like lotteries that, you know, just like right around him, you know, Brogdon was drafted. Siakam was drafted. And there were a couple others who are now contributing in the league where you kind of hope Diallo would be too. But I think it's a little bit harder for bigs. Bigs have the highest replacement level in the league when it comes to production. So what that means is the average replacement level big is better. It produces more than any other production. Like, let's say, like the average replacement level guard. So it's easier to find bigs that are going to give you what Diallo gives you for minimum level contracts. So, you know, unless he's really shown you something, it really doesn't make sense to bring him back. There may be like a weird wonky scenario where you want to sign him to a little bit bigger salary so you can utilize him in a trade more effectively next summer or, you know, the subsequent summer. But I don't think the benefits of that are worth it. As opposed to just going to use your minimum exception on a big that can actually contribute. Like this year, Nerlens Noel got the minimum contract, who he's not been a great player in his career, but I'd probably rather him than Diallo. Jahlil Okafor got a minimum contract. He's definitely better than Diallo. So, and we have Jahlil's rights. Not rights, we have him under contract as a team option this summer. So I think Jahlil is coming back, and I don't think Diallo is. And that's not a knock on Diallo or the organization. It is what it is.
Yep. Agreed.
Cool. Well, I think those were great questions. Thanks for sending them in, guys. And we'll continue to do stuff like this throughout. So thanks for listening.